Good morning, this is Tim Hayes, the Executive Director of AIRCRE. I want to welcome all of you to this conference call this morning. The purpose of this call is to bring our members up to speed on some of the key initiatives that are making their way through Sacramento. And we have two guests, very special guests, that are going to be helping us this morning. Rex Heim, who is the President and CEO of the Commercial Business Properties Association, and also Matt Hargrove. And Matt is the Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs. And if any of you attended our January event 8 or 9 months ago in downtown LA, you might be familiar with Matt because he was one of the panelists that day. The impetus behind having this conference call, and hopefully in the coming months doing a better job of keeping our members up to speed on what is going on in Sacramento, really stems from the dual agency bill that was making its way through Sacramento last year. And the AIR and our members, along with a whole bunch of help from Rex and Matt, we were able to, at least for the time being, defeat that bill. And if you recall, that bill, if passed, would have eliminated all forms of dual agency in commercial real estate. And so the AR got very involved. Jason Jameson, who is a past president and runs GM Properties out in Whittier, was incredibly involved, made a couple of trips to Sacramento with Matt Hargrove and met with some legislators up there. Long story short, the net effect was that we were able to defeat that bill. But it certainly brought to light that as an industry, and in some respects, even as an organization, we are not doing all that we should be doing to stay in touch with what's going on in Sacramento as it relates to legislation that affects the commercial real estate industry. So AIRCRE, formed a partnership or became a supporter of CBPA a couple of years ago. Through those joined forces have been able to do some good things already. We want to be more involved going forward, and we certainly want our members and our member firms to be involved. So I'm going to turn it over to Rex and Matt, and they're going to, for the next 45 minutes or so, talk to you about some initiatives that are going through Sacramento that we need to be aware of, and they will give us recommendations on whether we should support or oppose some of that legislation. After the call, we will be sending a follow-up communication. And I also believe that we will make this conference call available via our website for anybody in your office who has not who was not able to jump on. The number of attendees right now is 39. We have 2,000 members. Frankly, one of the calls that I get quite often from members is, "Hey, what are we doing to oppose or to support?" And then, you know, pick your piece of legislation. What I want to stress to our members is that the AIR and CBPA can do only so much, that ultimately it comes down to individuals getting in touch with their representatives and making their voices heard. That has much more impact than the AIR sending a letter on behalf of our members. What the legislators really want to hear from is their own constituents and their positions on bills and why they either think that they should be supported or opposed. So if we all sit by and expect that CBPA or AIRCRE is going to handle all of this for us, we run the risk of having bills pass that are very detrimental to the commercial real estate industry. So when we send out the follow-up communication, it will have a link to CBPA's website. I encourage every firm to get involved with CBPA. And when I say get involved, I mean financially. They run a great organization up there, but they run it on a shoestring. So if we don't support them as an organization financially, they don't have the financial resources then to do what we need them to do in Sacramento to help us. So please, when you get the follow-up communication, push it around your office and encourage your office managers, or if you are the office manager or the owner of the company, please very seriously consider supporting what CBPA is doing for the industry. I should mention also that all the other major organizations like NAIOP, SIOR, not SRR, we're having discussions with them. NAIOP, BOMA, a number of the others, CCIM, I believe, are involved with CBPA, and all of us should be also. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to either Matt or Rex. You guys can jump in. Again, Rex is the president and CEO. Matt is the senior vice president of governmental affairs. So Matt and or Rex, take it away.
Tim, this is Rex, and thank you for that very gracious introduction. And I can tell you that it's been a great partnership, and Matthew and I both enjoy working with you, and you are right on top of things down there. So thanks for your leadership in the LA area, because let me tell you, that's one of the hotbeds in California. Just so for those, since there's so many of you that are on the line that probably don't know very much about CBPA, I wanted to take just a moment to give you some quick background on it. California Business Properties was formed in 1972. At that point, it was just a group of shopping center folks and some retailers who had been warned and been told that the EPA at the federal level was going to levy a $500 annual charge per parking slot in their parking lots. So the shopping center folks and the retailers did some quick math and realized that they'd be sending more money back to DC for their parking lots than they were even going to make in profit in a year. So they went back, did battle, and were successful in defeating the proposal, came back and said, you know what, there's going to be other bad ideas. We need to keep this thing going. So it started out with the shopping center folks. ICSC was very deeply involved and still is today. And since that time, we've created a pretty substantial operation that involves, as Tim mentioned, BOMA, California, and all the BOMA chapters, NAIOP, and all of their chapters throughout the state, IREM, all the IREM chapters, ACRE is involved, RELA, which is the Retail Leaders Industry Association, the NAREIT, which is the National Association of Real Estate Investment Trusts, and other groups are very supportive and part of our umbrella organization. We are the only organization nationwide that's brought all those major groups, in particular BOMA, ICSC, and NAIOP together to singly purpose and address commercial real estate industry issues. Over the years, we were the ones that created the law in California, which I will discuss later in a moment, that prohibits commercial rent control in this state. We're the ones that have consistently led the battles against split roll tax, and there have been many proposals over the years and a lot of really other bad ideas, and fight to protect not just the ownership, but the ability of all of us to continue to do business in California. I know we're going to talk about the ballot measures and we're going to talk about the candidates, but before we do that, I want to tell you something that we did on Friday. Some of you may have heard of a case called the Upland decision. This was a decision down in the Upland area in Southern California, where the judge ruled that despite what Proposition 218 says, you would no longer be required for a two-thirds vote to pass a tax on businesses in California. You could do it with a simple majority if it was brought to you by a group of people with a petition. Well, which is pretty silly. And so the first people to pick up this mantle and proceed to do that, of course, was the city of San Francisco. Their district attorney said, well, what the heck, we can now pass these things with 50%. Wink, nod. We went out to the union guys. They did some signature gathering, and they turned in enough signatures to put on the ballot a, quote, child care proposal that was aimed at just commercial real estate rents. In other words, whatever the rents were, a percentage of that had to be paid to the city for this project. The total cost, by the way, the first year alone will be $146 million that our industry will be paying. So the measure went on the ballot. BOMA San Francisco and NAIOP up there, along with some other businesses, led a huge battle and campaign against it. And despite their best efforts, the measure passed with 50%, but less than 51%, and nowhere near the two-thirds requirement that Proposition 218 has established in California for law. So the city began moving forward to do this again on another retail measure to apply on their profits and on and on. And we're afraid that was going to spread throughout the state of California, because what generally starts in San Francisco spreads to California and then ultimately across the country. So On Friday, California Business Properties Association, BOMA California, the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, and the California Business Roundtable filed a suit against the city and county of San Francisco, alleging that they had violated Proposition 218 in the Constitution of California, and that the tax that they had levied was illegal. They're not happy about us having done that, but we think it's really important to do, and we're going to continue that court case and hopefully all the way up to the Supreme Court of California, and we will be victorious. I can tell you this, that the overwhelming majority of cases that Howard Jarvis folks have been involved in, we have been successful, and we have no reason to think that this will not also be one of those as well. So that's hot off the presses. But wanted to make sure you were aware of that because it certainly could make its way into the LA Basin and beyond. There are several measures that are on the ballot this November. One of them is Proposition 3, and it creates $8 billion for more water infrastructure in California.
Rex, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Real quick, just because I want to make sure for the group on the phone, if you have questions, as Rex or Matt are talking, I should have mentioned this in my intro. There is a chat box that should be on the pop-up window that you're seeing on your screen, so you can see. I just typed an entry in that chat box that says write your questions here. So as Matt and Rex are talking, if you have questions, you can type it into that chat box and hit send. And then at the end of this, time permitting, we will go through and answer as many questions as we can.
Thanks, and that's important because I'm sure hopefully there will be some questions, Tim, at the end. Proposition 3 is a $8 billion water infrastructure bond, and as I think anybody who lives in California understands, we can never have too much water in this state. And so we are very much supportive of that, and we also think that the state is finally on the right track. They have started allocating dollars for the Sites Reservoir development up here in Northern California. That will ensure that there's water flowing to Southern California, because I think all of you are aware that we have had less snowpack, and the biggest water storage facility in California was always the Sierra Mountains. The water stored up there would take us all the way through the year. Now it's very, very sparse and not as successful as it has been, so being able to capture water when it's raining becomes even more important. So we're encouraging people to vote yes on Proposition 3. Proposition 5 just allows folks to move their property tax values around statewide. As you know, in some counties in California, you can move your property. When you sell your property, you can move that base year to your new property, residential that is. And in some counties, they actually allow county-to-county changes. But it's not a statewide thing. It's very hit and miss. And this would make sure that it is done statewide. It was put on the ballot by the California Association of Realtors, and we're also supporting that measure. Proposition 6, which is the gas tax repeal, we don't have an official position. We think folks need to look at that and make their own determinations. There are certainly arguments pro and con. The pro arguments are that California's roads are in very bad condition and need to be fixed. The argument con to that is that the state has lots of money. They didn't need to have another new tax to do that. And then what they should be doing is protecting transportation dollars and gas tax to be used appropriately and not for other things. The fact of the matter on the other side says, well, but we're so far behind, we need to make a long-term commitment and we need to be doing this. And then the con side is that we can have this long-term commitment without increasing taxes. I don't know whether you're familiar with the Proposition 6 itself, but it's basically a 10-year, $5-point-something billion annually for a $50 billion fix for our roads. Within there, though, there is a couple of challenges. One is that we cannot build any new roads with any of that money. It could only be used for maintenance and improving existing roadways, not anything new. And the other thing it does is it spends a little over $1 billion for just bike trails in California. And so there's a lot of pro and cons. I encourage everybody to read all the information out on those measures and to make that decision for yourself. Proposition 10, on the contrary side, we absolutely are involved in and oppose. This is the one that will repeal Costa-Hawkins and allow rent control to happen throughout California, and it will indeed happen throughout California. Expands it to so it can also be applied to single-family residences, and expands it so that it creates 539 rent control boards that will oversee all of our properties in the residential arena and determine what can be charged, what can't be charged, and on and on. It's a total nightmare. It's totally the wrong way to go. It does not create more housing. If anything, it'll create less housing because people are going to stop building apartments, and it's going to result in a great dislocation of the economy. So we are opposed to that. I actually serve as the co-chair on the No campaign, and we are out raising money for this effort. And just you go, well, that's residential. How will that impact us? As I mentioned at the beginning, we passed a law 30 years ago which prohibits commercial rent control in California. But I can tell you this, that if this measure passes in November, if Proposition 10 and Costa-Hawkins is repealed and commercial permanent residential rent control can be established anywhere in the state, that there will be a concerted effort in the legislature to end the prohibition that we currently have protecting commercial. And as you know, if you live in the LA Basin, you saw down there that people in Burbank and other areas are already clamoring for commercial rent control. And let me tell you, it will happen. And if there's commercial rent control, it'll be the end of the day for all of us. So the message that we have to do is we can't let them get residential rent control because they'll come after us for sure next. One measure that isn't on the ballot, thank goodness we were able to keep it from getting on, was the split roll property tax. For those of you who are maybe not sure what this is, under Proposition 13, all properties are treated the same for property tax purposes. And by the way, Proposition 13 didn't establish that. That was established in the original Constitution of California and has been that way since 1849. What they want to do is to separate commercial property out of the protections of Proposition 13 so they can either do a higher rate or more frequency reassessments and on and on. The measure that will be on the 2020 ballot does the following. It brings all commercial property to the 2020 value. So every property in California will be reassessed to 2020 values. It will then start the new tax rate based upon that. And at that point, you will also be reassessed every 3 years thereafter. So your certainty issue, which is very, very important to a value of commercial property, will be lost in this state. By the way, the only reason they're going to make it and we're able to get enough signatures to be on the 2020 ballot in November was that near the end of the campaign, Facebook gave them $500,000 to help get enough signatures to qualify. And so I want folks to remember that. Let's talk about a couple of them. Yes.
Kim, I just put my finger up and we're having Rex hold for a second to give you a chance and or members a chance to ask anything about the propositions, what we just talked about before we move on.
Okay, now the only way that the members can ask questions is by typing it into the chat box down below like I've done. So any members that have questions, go ahead and do that. I just want to be clear, Rex, with what you just said. So the split roll tax will not be on the ballot, at least in 2020.
It will be on the ballot in 2020. It will be on the November ballot of 2020 for sure right now.
Oh, okay. So I misunderstood. Okay, that's not good. Okay. So, and at the end of the call, maybe the two of you can talk a little bit about what the industry needs to do to get involved with these types of measures so that we can hopefully have a voice in defeating the ones that we need to and supporting the ones we need to.
Sure. I don't see any questions yet there, Tim, so I'm going to go ahead and proceed.
Well, Tim, why don't we address your question right now before we move on to that? So the importance of pointing out that the split roll is on the November 2020 ballot, that is because many of us believe that it was going to be on the ballot this November. We were able to stymie their efforts there, and they moved it because they needed more time and they think it's going to be more beneficial for them to have it in November of 2020. We were very concerned if we were going to have Proposition 10 on the ballot this year, as well as split roll. If that happened, that would have meant that the residential side of our industry would have been fighting the residential rent control measure all by itself, and the commercial would have been fighting split roll all by ourselves. That would have been a divide and conquer issue and would have been very troublesome for us. So everybody, both residential side and commercial side, is very pleased and happy that we were able to get the split roll push to 2020. That is now allowing those of us on the commercial side to get more involved in the battle to stop the residential rent control. We've already raised on the Prop 10 side of things, which Rex is one of the co-chairs, even though he's the commercial guy, I believe over $20 million. The other side, which is a much more grassroots effort, ostensibly, but they're backed by the unions, have raised almost $13 million. So we're very much in the process of raising money to push back on the rent control Prop 10. And the exact same effort will need to be done on the other side once split roll comes down the pipe.
Okay. And there are a few questions now. Can you guys see the question boxes?
I can see the questions and okay. I can respond.
Okay, so respond, and the timing of your response is, if you want to do them now, do them now. If you want to do them at the end, that it's totally up to you.
As it relates to the issues that we've discussed so far, I'm going to do it right now. So as it relates to Proposition 3, I do believe that there is some money for the LA River, but I can confirm that and get information down to Tim. Another one is, how can we get information about contributing to the opposed Prop 10? We'll send something down to you, Tim, that you can distribute out to everybody after this call.
Yep.
Another question references Prop 65, and that's going to be discussed under the regulatory part of this call that Matthew's going to get to in a bit. So I think we've covered the questions that are up there so far, and now I'll move into the candidates, and then we'll jump into the legislative updates. First off, the most important thing you could do is remember that no industry is more impacted by the actions of government than our industry. Every single aspect of real estate is impacted one way or another by what legislators do. And so you need to take the time to look at the candidates, read where they stand on these issues, ask them where they stand on these issues. And if there's somebody that supports split roll tax, you got to vote no. If there's someone who is opposing split roll tax, that's the most important litmus test. You got to be voting yes. So that's first and foremost. Let me tell you about some of the November candidates. We have the two major candidates are Gavin Newsom, who's the Democrat, and John Cox, who's the Republican running for governor. Basically, between the two of them right now, there is a 20-point spread plus. So it would be very, very difficult for John Cox to win this November. So paying attention to what they say, though, is important because we have to know exactly where they're going to be. Just so you know, we have reached out to both candidates. We created, along with 28 other business groups, a business federation. And we've asked each of the candidates, first we asked them to do a debate. Unfortunately, Gavin Newsom had already agreed to one debate with CNN and said he wasn't going to be doing any others. So the debate we had proposed along with the broadcasters of California is not going to occur. We then asked both candidates to participate in a meeting with the 29 organizations, go through our position papers, and have a full-on discussion about the future of California's economy and the business community. We've now heard back from Newsom, and he's agreed. We expect to hear back from John Cox shortly. So we're going to be doing that with both of them. Just some interesting kind of fun notes. In the U.S. Senate race, as you know, we have Dianne Feinstein, who's the incumbent, being challenged by Kevin DeLeon. There's about a 30-point spread there in that particular race. But interesting enough, both of them have been sort of stepping in the last couple of weeks. It turns out that Dianne Feinstein, one of her key staff people, has actually been a spy for the People's Republic of China. for the last 20 years, and which was kind of humorous. And it turns out also that Kevin DeLeon, who is, they make all of his stump speeches, includes getting all the guns off the streets in California and increasing gun control, has an armed bodyguard with him at all times. So a lot of people are going, you know, going, this is kind of an interesting campaign between the two of them. But those are your two choices. I'm encouraging anybody who thinks about the future of California to support Dianne Feinstein on issues of water and some other issues. She's been very important for our community, and she understands commercial real estate. Certainly Kevin DeLeon has not been a friend of our industry. There's a lot of assembly races, but we don't have targeted races we're going to talk about yet. We'll be sending out information on that out down to Tim and whatnot as we get through probably latter part of first part of September. You can also contribute to the CVPA PAC, and we'll make that information available. And we work very, very closely with Jobs PAC and other organizations so that we coordinate, as is legally allowed, our donations to candidates that address our issues appropriately and that we can count on to be with us on key issues in 2019 and beyond.
Any questions?
There was one more question that was typed in about the status of, it says Bonata 2618. I don't know if you guys know what that is. Mandatory.
Oh, yeah, property. That's a thing. Yeah. Matthew's going to talk about that.
That's part of the legislative update.
Okay, and also 1427.
All right, well, if there's no more questions on kind of the overarching political stuff, then we'll move to the legislative update. First of all, let me see if so the legislature in the state of California has a two-year legislative session, which gets treated year by year. Over the 2 years, over 5,000 bills normally get introduced into the legislature. I ask members if you can count on one hand five bills that you think need to be passed into law, and folks usually cannot do that. That means here in Sacramento, much of our day-to-day operations are based on slogging through those 5,000 bills. About 2,500 bills get introduced each year. On average, those bills get amended four times. So we're looking upwards of 10,000 bills per year that Rex and I and Rex's son now, who works with us, read every time they're amended. We try to figure out those bills that have some sort of impact on the commercial real estate industry and try to push them out to members. You are all the experts in legislation, whether you know it or not. You are the folks who are doing the day-to-day work in California on in our industry, and you are the ones that know exactly how these bills will impact you. So every single year we have what we call the industry-wide legislative day, where we usually gather either in Orange County or Los Angeles, and AIR is always invited to this, where we pull together experts within the industry and we slog through all the bills that we've identified that will have some impact on us. That meeting normally pertains to about 400 to 500 bills. Those are the bills that we've identified that we're tracking very, very closely and are pushing forward on. Each of those bills we go through, everything from CEQA to taxes to real estate specific issues in terms of brokers. We even split them up in terms of residential issues and commercial issues. So what we're going to try to do today with about the 10 to 15 minutes that we have left is hit the highlights of those 500 bills that we've worked on over the past year. We can't get into details on all these bills. We know that. There's been some questions on some of the bills. We'll let you know the status of them. but we want to try and give you the flavor of the what we're doing on a day-to-day basis up here on behalf of the industry and a lot of the bills that we're following. Of the 500 bills that we follow, we end up taking active positions on about 200 of them. And incredibly, we usually see a split of about 60-40 on those bills, of bills that we support and bills that we oppose. Unfortunately, the bills that we support end up having a much tougher time getting through the legislative process. So we end up, by the end of the year, many of the bills that we're following are bills that we are opposing, trying to get amendments to, or outright killing. However, each year we put out the note to our industry asking what laws you need changed in order to do what you do more efficiently. These are usually ideas that are fairly technical. They're not things that you'll read about in the LA Times, but they are bills that we introduce to address specific issues. This year we had two of those bills, AB 2173 and AB 2847. And please don't worry about writing down the bill numbers that I give you. We will be sending out a document that will have most of these bills in them. I believe that the two bills that were asked about are stalled in the process, but we're going to make sure. So these two bills that we sponsored this year address very specific real estate issues. The first one by Mr. Santiago out of the Los Angeles area, that bill seeks to start addressing the issue that we deal with on a daily basis with property that gets left behind when a tenant moves out. As you know right now, most of you on the line are brokers and have to deal with this issue in terms of getting properties cleaned out and turned around as quickly as possible. Right now, the state law in California is a threshold of $750. So somebody leaves behind a desk and some chairs and some old computer equipment, you basically legally have to go through a auction process that is time-consuming and expensive. What AB 2173 does is we tried to lift that threshold from $750 to $10,000. The legislative committee judiciary balked at that, so the threshold got lifted to $2,000, which again is not a lot, but it's better than it was. But more importantly, its current law says $750 or less to trigger, or $750 or $1 per square foot, whichever is less. What we were able to do with 2173 is we flipped that language, and it's now $2,000 or the amount of the last month's rent, or whichever is more. So if you have a very large building, 10,000 square foot building, that means that the threshold that you'll be dealing with is actually $10,000. If you have a warehouse building that people have left behind machinery that is 100,000 square feet, then you have a lot more room to move with there. So we think that that is something, again, it's not going to change your lives, but we do believe it's something that will be much more efficacious in terms of how we run our businesses. AB 2847 is a very technical bill. When we initially introduced it, it did a lot more than what was signed into law. But this is part of our overall effort to separate areas of the code where commercial real estate and residential real estate are mashed together. For many different reasons, having commercial and residential together with some of the laws doesn't make sense. As you know, the residential side of things is much more restrictive. The state looks at the at transactions on the residential side as unbalanced between a professional and a non-professional, and seeks to layer on many, many more protections for residential transactions. Whereas on the commercial side, we want the state to continue looking at it as a business-to-business transaction. And the only way we can do that in some areas of the code is by separating commercial code from residential code. And that's a long-term thing that we're doing, but overall is something that will help protect our industry, especially as we're seeing more and more aggressive attempts to do things like rent control and other protections on evictions and things like that. if we're out of the residential sections, that will protect the commercial side of things. I'm going to try and hit a couple of bills that are hot topics in Los Angeles. Earthquake safety. As you know, you have a local ordinance on earthquake safety that has been quite costly and has been difficult for those buildings that have been caught up in it to comply with. Mr. Nazarian out of the Los Angeles area tried to bring two of those ideas to Sacramento and apply them statewide. One of the bills would have required that the state building codes be changed to immediate occupancy. So if you were trying to sell a building, what that bill would have required is you get an inspection. If you weren't up to current seismic code and 150% more, you were going to have to invest in that building to make it such. This was going to cost millions of dollars for your typical Class A office building. And our worry always is we don't want the commercial real estate industry opposing seismic safety. We don't oppose that. What we do oppose are ideas that are unnecessarily costly. So we did everything we can to work with Mr. Nazarian on that bill. He actually took all of our language, and we were able to get that amended in a way that we as an industry have gone neutral on it. His other bill would have been just as concerning, especially to brokers who are trying to move buildings, in that it would have started red tagging buildings that were not up to current code. You can imagine trying to deal with a current tenant who's in a building that got red tagged because it's not up to seismic code, or trying to lease a building that is on the statewide list of buildings that are not up to seismic safety. Now, not being up to seismic safety doesn't mean that the building's about to imminently fall down. What it meant was is that the building was not up to whatever the current seismic code was. So basically, when they update the seismic code every 3 to 5 years, every building that had not been completely renovated or built within that 3 to 5 year window would have been out of compliance, something that we felt was very onerous, very expensive, and we spent a lot of time pushing back on it, and we got that bill fixed. There's a pair of bills on lactation room accommodations, which I want to bring up with you as brokers because these are bills that if you're trying to lease a building that isn't compliant with it, it would have to become compliant with it if these things became law. There's two competing bills, one of them by Senator Weiner out of San Francisco. This bill adopts San Francisco's measure on lactation rooms and basically says that any building with 200 or more people in it have to have dedicated space for lactation accommodations anytime a permit is pulled for a TI. So that means if that bill goes statewide and this bill's still alive and we oppose it, that if you're leasing a building and part of that lease is a TI of $100,000 or more, which you all know is not a lot of money, that's carpets and paint, you would then have to dedicate 150 square foot room, take it off of the leasable space, and build out a lactation room. The numbers that we've gotten from that from our Los Angeles area members is the cost of doing a TI to accommodate this bill is anywhere from $30,000 to $130,000, depending on the building, and that's a cost that would be eaten by the owner. We are pushing back on that. We're opposing it. Politically, nobody wants to oppose a lactation bill, but it's something that we have to do on behalf of the industry. Luckily for us, there's an alternative bill by Ms. Limon that would basically expand the federal definition of how you provide a reasonable accommodation for lactation, and it puts the onus not on the building owner or the lessor when there's a transaction, but puts the onus on the actual business where the accommodation needs to be made. So we are moving into support of that bill, and we're doing everything we can to stop the Weiner bill because that would have a huge negative impact on our industry. SB 993 by Mr. Hertzberg, this is a services tax. This is a bill that's come around every year, and we are doing everything we can to oppose it. This would actually tax brokerage firms for the services that you provide and would mean millions of dollars coming out of all of your pockets and moving to the state's coffer. And it's something that's very, very worrisome to us. We don't think that it's something that will pass this year or next year, but we need to be vigilant on these types of bills, and we are opposing it. There's a whole list of bills that have been signed into law recently that we will provide down to Tim. They're things that you need to be aware of. They're everything from PACE administrator bills, which is not a huge issue for our industry, but we have found recently that there several transactions have been hung up because of the lack of transparency with buildings that have signed up for local PACE programs. And that's something that brokers have brought to us and said, we need to figure that out. We need to fix it. And we need to reform it. You can't have people signing up for PACE programs that are getting in the middle of transactions and stopping buildings moving from one owner to the next. There's a whole pile of transaction and broker-specific measures that will be on the list that we're sending down to you. Everything from redefinition of what a broker is that we're opposing. It's a bill that died, AB 482. There's a lot of battles in the legislature of folks that want to define or redefine what a broker is and who can be a broker and what information you need to disclose. As you all know, the bottoms of all of your emails have become thicker because of some of these bills that we've been dealing with. One, however, that we have supported is AB 749 by Ms. Irwin. This is a bill that would clarify that that a salesperson who's working for a brokerage firm who's showing properties, as long as they're working under the umbrella of a broker, doesn't actually have to have a brokerage license as long as they're a part of that company. That bill has stalled out for this year, but we will be working on that moving forward so we can address that. Another bill that we have supported is an Arambula bill, AB 1289, that tweaks some of the language in the brokerage area that would make definitions of who a broker is and what you can do more efficient under the Professions Act. That bill has also stalled, but we'll be working with CAR to try and reintroduce that next year. Another bill that was introduced this year that was meant to deal with the Hariki case, AB 2884, that bill, again, has also stalled, but we'll be working with CAR to address that next year. Hariki gets us into the issues of dual agency, which AIR was instrumental in helping us stop that bill this year. There was a brokerage firm out of San Diego who introduced that bill with a fairly powerful legislator from San Diego. Industry heard our call. We put out the emergency call saying this bill will move through the legislature if we don't step up, spend some money, and stop it. AIR members were there. I believe that you guys did meetings with legislators all throughout the LA Basin, led by Jason Jameson and Tim. You connected with some of the large brokerage firms, CB, JLL, in the area, and coordinated with them and us on meetings. The hearing on that bill was quite amazing. Jason was up here to testify, and we were able to stop it by one vote. We got two Democrat legislators to actually speak against the bill. And it was a pretty stunning defeat of that bill. We've been keeping an eye on it all year. There's been rumors that she was going to try and revise it and move the bill again this year, but we've seen no action or activity on that. So I'm getting the high sign there. You'll be getting a list with all of these bills and more on them.
One thing I want to say, I'm Tim, if Jason is on the line, or if he isn't on the line, I certainly want to give kudos again to his effort up here, because I can tell you that his presence in the legislators' offices up here was hugely significant in our achieving a victory. And some of you may not know, but California Business Properties Association has, this October, we will be awarding Jason a champion of the industry at our annual industry awards dinner, because he truly was a champion of the industry, and he did so much for so many. And Jason, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I just texted him to try and find out if he is on the call. I don't know if he is or not, but yeah, we've given him on a board level, we've given him, you know, we've made sure that he knows how much we appreciate all he did for us. Along those lines, real quick, sorry to interrupt, Matthew. Just to the members, I wanted to point out that when one of the things that was interesting, because with the dual agency bill that we helped defeat, was I had never been involved on that level with legislation. And I went out and visited probably 12 or 13 or 14 legislators here locally in Southern California. And it's a great experience. They're very open to setting up those meetings and to meeting. They're very open to hearing what you have to say. You know, with the exception of maybe one or two that could sort of, you know, made the meetings very quick. The rest of them were very interested in hearing what we had to say. They wanted to learn about our organization. So, you know, and like I said at the beginning of the call, it's one thing for me to go into, you know, a bunch of areas where I am not a constituent. I live in Whittier, so I certainly met now I'm forgetting his name, but the legislator from Whittier. And then I went and I met with a whole bunch of others, and they listened to me, but it has much more impact when you are meeting with legislators in the area where you have voting rights. So I would encourage all of you, as these bills come down, and as Rex and Matt make us aware of them and give us some, tell us that these are certain bills that you need to get active on, I would encourage all of you to make appointments with your legislators and go in there and tell them what it's all about, what you do for a living, why these bills affect what you're trying to do, why they're not good or why they are good, and give them some support. And, you know, as Matthew mentioned, we defeated the bill by one vote. And that was the result of, I believe, if I heard this right, it was a result of a meeting that we had with one of the legislators in the Bellflower area who had a personal, who knew Hassan, Iqbal Hassan, who is on our board of directors. Hassan had supported a couple of bills that she had introduced in the past, so she knew of him. She took the meeting with us, listened to what we had to say, and she was one of the key votes that helped us defeat that bill. So you don't always have the sense that, you know, you really can make a difference and that your voice can be heard. Sometimes there's, you know, sort of pessimism when it comes to what goes on in Sacramento as far as getting involved. But I can tell you from firsthand experience that the involvement we had absolutely had an impact on defeating dual agency. And so I would encourage all of you to you know, when the time is right and when it's necessary, to get in touch with your legislators and make sure they know who you are.
And Tim, just real quick, I want to, on the Bonta bill, AB 2618, that bill is dead. We were able to get that smothered on the suspense file. The Hill bill, 1427, that is still alive. That will be heard on the floor over the next 3 weeks. That's a bill we've been watching very carefully. We've been working with IREM on that bill. And it's one of those tricky bills where they're trying to figure out how to not discriminate against folks that are veterans. It's another one of those very difficult issues for us where we need to work behind the scenes with the legislators to make sure that what they ultimately pass doesn't put us in a position where we're going to get sued, but also our industry doesn't want to be seen as throwing up roadblocks in terms of accommodating folks with veteran status. These happen a lot. We do work on a lot of these bills, and hopefully we can get some of the language worked out in a manner that will protect our industry. And then just a note in terms of how important the grassroots efforts are here. they're more important now than ever because of term limits. 30 years ago, the way that lobbying happened in Sacramento was RECs knew every single legislator's birthday, knew their kids' names, knew their grandkids' names, went to lunch with them on a regular basis, and that's how it was done in Sacramento. There are no dark, smoky rooms, though, anymore in Sacramento. And what that, and especially with a term-limited legislature where folks are not here for 20 to 30 years, they're here for a much shorter amount of time now, coupled with all the transparency laws, is we are much more in the mode of knocking on their door and blowing them away with our arguments. It's not based on personal relationships as much anymore in Sacramento, though they are still key. But the effort of locals to formulate that local relationship, that personal relationship, and connecting a face with our industry that votes for them, and more importantly, kicks into their campaign every once in a while, is extremely important. And that's why we talked about the PAC earlier, and that's why we talk about getting involved at the local level at a much higher level than we currently are.
Okay, I don't so see
this opportunity, and let me tell you, I am very impressed by the fact that 45 people have stayed with us all the way. I mean, that's very, very positive. So thank you, Tim.
Yeah, that's great. And real quick, before you guys jump off, if you don't mind, can you speak quickly about the Dynamex decision and what possibly could be done to reverse that or change that? And maybe explain very quickly what it is and what has happened and what the industry might be able to do to oppose it or to make a change to it.
Sure. This is, again, we've, you know, to use the cliche, have just hit the kind of the tip of the iceberg. There are so many issues continuously going on in Sacramento that impact our industry. Dynamex is one of those. Dynamex is a recent California court decision that basically changes the way that independent contractors are defined and treated in the state of California. All of this stems out of the battle with unions over how Uber and Lyft are treated. If you haven't followed this, it's been about a 5-year legislative effort and a huge union effort to get Uber and Lyft drivers to be considered as employees and not independent contractors. That effort now has kind of boiled over onto all of us. The Dynamex decision, we're unsure yet exactly how it will play out in the real world, but we believe that any of you that deal with anyone who's an independent contractor will see pressures now to treat that person, that company, as part of your own company and everything that comes along with that. So, you know, right now the focus is on Uber and Lyft, but pretty soon that's going to be pushed into how you deal with security guards at your properties, how you deal with landscapers, window washers at your properties. And it's all a push by the unions to get more people classified as actual employees so they can ultimately organize those employees. We are part of a very large effort with the chamber and with the NFIB. That's the small business. The chamber's the big businesses and NFIB is the small businesses. And about 100 other business groups that have put together a pretty quick coalition on this. We are meeting with legislators up and down the state to explain to them what the decision means, how it will have a huge negative impact on companies in their district. And we're going to the legislature to ask them to fix the decision. To tell you the truth, we get a lot of sympathy on this in meetings behind the scenes, but there's not a lot of motivation for legislators right now in a election year to undo something that the labor unions are very, very happy with. They love the decision. They're as happy with the Dynamex decision as we are with the Janus decision. So that's where we are. We're doing what we can to fix it, but we don't think that there will be any real legislative activity on this until next year, if anything at all. And we're waiting to see how this plays out and how it will actually impact those of us, it's all of us, deal with independent contractors.
Very good. Thank you very much to the two of you for taking an hour of your time to get on the phone with all of us. Are there any other, maybe a couple of
I have questions. One final warning, since everyone calls me the black cloud, I get paid to be nervous. All of you have dealt with Title 24 and energy issues as you've tried to transact on buildings. All of you have seen how some simple, very simple TIs that cost, throwing out a number, $8 per square foot 15 years ago is now costing you $40 per square foot, $60 per square foot. All of that is being triggered by the state's energy code, Title 24. As you know now, very simple TIs where before you were just going to rearrange a few walls is now triggering you to rewire the entire building. What we can say is we are active and involved with the Title 24 effort, but we are very, very outgunned. Our industry every year spends about $10,000 pushing back on energy issues. The environmental groups and the contractors that do energy issues collectively spend several million dollars trying to get the energy code to be stricter and stricter and stricter. This next go around, they do every year and a half. They update the codes. They have let us know that they're coming after commercial. And those are the actual words that the environmental groups have used. So they're looking at doing a jump in the energy code, where on a normal year, we would see a 3 to 5% increase in stringency in the energy code. They're looking at doing a 20 to 25% increase in the energy code. You will see a call from us. We need help. We need to hire folks to help us push back on this very technical process that happens. And we need to engage in this upfront, or else you're all going to be dealing with it in 5 years from now and wondering why a light switch is costing you $10. With that negative note, thank you all very much for being on the call.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Look for the email from us that will come out. We'll send it either later today or tomorrow. It has, Matthew has already provided us a 5-page document that gives some details of just about everything he talked about this morning. We are also, as I mentioned at the beginning, we've recorded this session and we will send out in the email. There will be information on how you can access the call, the recorded version of it. And you can, hopefully you'll push that around your office and other people that you work with will jump on and listen to that. And then we will keep you posted at least on a quarterly basis going forward on these issues and others as they come up, as we stay in touch with Rex and Matthew. So thank you, everybody. Thank you again, Matt and Rex. We really appreciate it. And we will all be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. And thanks, everybody on the line. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.